Well, welcome, everybody. We're on our armchair traveling, and tell us more about what we're doing today with the panelists that we have. We have Joe and Simon. So let's see what we can find out more about touring Ireland by train.
That's right. We've been talking about a very special train. It's called the Grand Hibernian, and it's basically a train that takes you through Ireland for several days and gives you a chance to explore the country.
That's right, and this is a luxurious train experience. It's not your run-of-the-mill, bumping-down-the-rails kind of train. This is definitely a very special experience.
And at the end of yesterday, they gave us a little bit of insight into what this train trip is really like. They suggested that there were sort of some private spaces, but they focused on the public spaces, and they talked specifically about what they called an exquisitely appointed set of dining rooms. There were two of them. And by exquisitely appointed, they really meant well-equipped. So they were talking about fine china dishes and forks and knives made out of silver and fancy food, things like that.
That's there weren't too many people either.
No, these trips, the itineraries they plan, have maybe about 40 people or so. And these people, as we find, can come from all over the world. They're not just from Europe. The author mentioned people from the United States as well. And it's an opportunity, the author says, to meet new people.
Mm-hmm. Right. And become your acquaintance, not necessarily your friend, but they might become your friend later, but you get to know them a little bit, right? And so you talk and eat with them. And we're going to talk about today some of the other things that the train is like and what you can do. So let's get going on our lesson on page 41 today. Where are we going to start?
Well, we'll be starting and talking about the beginning of that journey on the right column of page 41.
Once the frolicking ends, and it's time to retire for the night, guests make their way to one of 20 ensuite cabins that combine traditional design and modern amenities. Wood panel. Paneling and original watercolors are softened by the addition of soft woolen throws and vases of fresh posies. And since the train stables overnight, you're guaranteed a restful sleep. I loved the warmth of my cabin and its oh-so-comfortable bed.
We're talking about the frolicking ends. I don't think you can do much frolicking, actually, on a train, can you?
I don't think so, but you know, this train is very open, has public spaces. Maybe you could do some frolicking.
You think they have places to dance and everything?
Maybe not, but I think that at least you can get off of the train and go and see other places as well.
I don't know, because it says once the frolicking ends, that means kind of partying.
Yeah, happy, playful behavior. And so
having a good time.
I guess basically they're talking about people having a good time with each other in the public spaces.
Because right. I can't remember the last time I literally frolicked.
Like danced like around?
When you were a kid.
Maybe when I was a kid, dancing around and walking somewhere. I don't know.
But this person likes to use very descriptive words, so writers sometimes do that, you know.
Yeah.
I probably wouldn't say frolicking.
You actually see that in the next part of the sentence here, where it says, after the frolicking ends, and it's time to retire for the night. Usually when we use that word retire, we're talking about people sort of finishing their working career and going into retirement, but here we're not talking about that at all.
That's right. To retire for the night means you're turning in, you're calling it a night, you're
time
going to
go
get
to
some
bed.
Get some rest, right?
It's time to go to bed.
Yeah.
So what do they do then?
Well, so when it's time to go to bed, you go to one of 20 ensuite cabins. And so a cabin, basically they're talking about a sleeping compartment of a train or your own room in the train.
Mm-hmm.
And when it says ensuite, it means?
Well, so as you can actually see in the picture, we have one room and then you have a door leading to another room. So some of the rooms are connected and they have a door in between them that usually can be locked.
They're like a suite, not just one room. Right?
Not just one individual room. You can actually open it up, which can be nice if you have a larger party. You can share a space.
Yeah, and they mention here that those cabins or those suites combine traditional design, so maybe the decoration has a lot of wood and beautiful things like that, but also modern amenities. So, you know, the washrooms and the facilities where you can clean up and things like that are all very modern.
The word amenities, we see that often when a hotel uses it.
That's right. Amenities are all just the little things, like Simon was mentioning, that usually end up in a hotel. We think of that. It's the different things that the hotel offers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the features or the benefits. So mm-hmm. these days it could be everything from free Wi-Fi to phone
well,
charging.
And soap and toothbrushes and mm-hmm. towels. And
bathrooms, all of that
yeah.
kind of stuff.
And continental yeah. breakfasts. All those little yep. things that go with yeah. hotel experiences.
Mm-hmm. And then they have watercolors, and they have soft wooden throws. What is a throw?
Throw is just a little bit of a blanket that you keep on to stay warm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. And then they even have fresh flowers.
That's right. They say fresh posies, and mm-hmm. posies are a type of flower.
Mm-hmm. So you really get the sense that it does kind of combine, you know, the things you would expect from a modern hotel, as well as that nice picturesque sort of design that's a little bit more traditional.
Now, yesterday in the program, we mentioned that it can be difficult to travel for a long time on a train because it's moving and it's rocking back and forth. And Joe, you and I have both tried to sleep on moving trains, and we've both found that sort of a difficult experience. But they tell us that that isn't a problem on this train.
How can the train stable? How can it become
well,
more
yeah,
stable?
It's an interesting word they use. A stable really is like a place where you keep animals. So when you stable a horse, it means you put the horse in the barn or mm-hmm. in the building to shelter them. And I guess that's what they do with this train. It means they park the train for the night. It stops moving.
Are you sure? Does it stop?
So basically, that's true. The train, pretty much overnight, it'll stop at a certain location, and that's where it stays for the night. So you're not dealing with rocking around and moving. You're actually staying in place for a gentle, good night's sleep, which is something I would really, really appreciate. I think all of my sleeper car experiences, I almost fall out of the bed, I hit the wall, something happens, and it's not very comfortable.
Really? That's mm-hmm. kind of strange.
Well, especially if you're on a 4-day trip, right? You want to have
there,
a good
right?
sleep.
But you can get a good sleep anyway. And what did this person like about their cabin?
Well, they mentioned the warmth of the cabin and its oh-so-comfortable bed. And when you say oh-so-comfortable, you're really just saying very.
Really, really comfortable.
Really comfortable bed.
And this is such a strong contrast to, like, the bunks that you normally see in sleeper cars. Even, I think of my time going through China, where you can get a soft sleeper from Beijing to Harbin. And even those soft sleepers are still pretty hard and not comfortable.
Right, and you don't get your own room like that, no?
No, it's you and five other strangers
right,
all
right.
hanging out together.
Right, so this is more like a hotel train, isn't it?
Right. Yeah.
Well, I guess, really, we've mentioned this before, but the idea here is that it's a tourist experience rather than traveling to a destination.
Mm-hmm. That's right. When you see that this train stables, you really start to understand that it's not so much about getting to one location, to another location, to another location as quickly as possible. It's more about the journey to each one and doing it in a very comfortable and luxurious fashion.
Okay, so let's read on.
So we're going to be at the bottom paragraph on page 41. Let's read together.
While some train aficionados don't care where they go, I'm as enamored of the destinations as I am of getting there. On day one, we headed north to Belfast, crossing the imaginary border that separates the Republic of Ireland from Northern Ireland, part of the United Kingdom. Our destination was the Peace Wall, actually a series of 48 walls, most of them in Belfast, totaling 22 miles in length. Three times as high as the Berlin Wall, they have come to be a tourist attraction and a form of artistic expression. Murals adorn the walls, and hopeful messages are scrawled across their surface. Visitors are encouraged to add their own messages.
Well, it starts off here by talking about train aficionados. And aficionados are just people who really love something. They have a real interest in this. And so we talked about yesterday how Joe and I both had model trains, and we both kind of were really interested in trains. So you might say we are aficionados, but really I don't know that either of us is committed enough, because an aficionado tends to be really obsessed with this
thing. Right.
That's right. I might be a journaling aficionado. I have all these stacks of, like, fancy leather-bound journals and special pens for them. That might be my area.
Well, I don't think so. Are you really enamored with it? And enamored means captivated, like we said yesterday. What does it mean to be enamored of something?
You know, to be enamored is just to be really engrossed, to be really drawn into something and just in love with what's going on. So the person's enamored with the destinations and that process of getting to the destinations.
So where are the destinations? Where are they going?
Well, very simply here, he lays out the itinerary. He says on day one, they headed north to Belfast. And Belfast is, of course, the capital of Northern Ireland. We talked a little bit about that yesterday. Northern Ireland and Southern Ireland are in different countries, but they're all part of the same island, and they're all sort of part of the same cultural... group of people.
Right. Again, the thing that traditionally really divided the two was, of course, religion, you know, whether you're Protestant or Catholic.
And so they mention that they travel north, and to get to Belfast, they cross an imaginary border that separates the Republic of Ireland, that's the south, from Northern Ireland, which is part of the United Kingdom. And so when they use that term imaginary border, they're talking about a border that doesn't really have police along it or fences or things like that. It's just really a line on a map.
Right. There's no intense security. No one's going to be checking your documents. You know, if I remember correctly, at one point, the United States and Canada, the border was sort of like this. It was much easier to cross. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
It still is pretty easy to cross compared to most borders.
In some places, it's easier than others even,
Right.
Okay, so they were headed for Peace Wall. What's that?
Well, it tells us that Peace Wall is actually not one wall. It's a series of 48 walls. And it says most of them are in Belfast. And these walls stretch for 22 miles in length.
And parts of these walls, if you kind of look into the history of it, you know, constructed in like the 1960s or so, and sort of dividing communities that were experiencing a lot of riots and a lot of conflict.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, essentially what these walls are is they're walls that were built during a time of conflict that was called the Troubles in Northern Ireland, where there was a lot of fighting between people from different communities. And so these walls basically kept people separate.
But now they put flowers and murals on them, and it's not the same.
That's true. It has a sort of artistic flair to it now.
Well, they've since signed a peace agreement that has ended the worst part of that conflict. And so people are now sort of able to live their lives more peacefully. And so those walls are maybe still there physically as a reminder of the past, but they're not there, you know, as a security thing anymore. And so people have taken to decorating them. They use the word murals, which is like a big painting. They say murals adorn the walls. So people have started to maybe spray paint on them or decorate them and turn them into artistic things.
Well, and people even like to sign them and say, I was here, so forth.
Right, just getting their own little message on that wall and maybe leaving their mark on history until somebody else maybe leaves their mark on history and covers it.
So they like to go and look at that, right? But I don't know if that's exciting, but I think Belfast itself is a very exciting city. It's an interesting city, and I'm sure they enjoyed the time there.
Right, and you get the sense that, you know, by taking this journey, you get to enjoy just a nice train, historic experiences, as well as seeing some of the art culture in these different places. I think being able to see the Peace Wall would just be a really nice experience, you know, because you see a special side of that area.
Have you ever been to Belfast?
I have never been to Europe, and I really wanted to be able to go to Ireland. My family is of Irish descent, and so actually I remember my grandmother on my mom's side had this huge trip to Ireland. So all of the sisters went. So it was like my grandmother, all the aunts, and my mom went over there and spent something like 2 or 3 weeks just going through Ireland, seeing all the, like, oh, this is where our family originated before we immigrated.
Oh, and you didn't go?
I was like 5 at the time.
Oh, you were
so my mom was like, that's a no-go. No. We were staying home.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, but you know, actually Belfast itself reminds me of places like Chicago, the old part. There's a lot of buildings are all made out of bricks and everything. It's very kind of old fashioned in a way.
Right. And so I think it's great if you are into history, architecture, art. There's a little something for everyone on this kind of journey.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So this is one of the things that they liked, and that was kind of a good place to start, don't you think?
Yeah, and then that's essentially their destination for the first day of this tour. They're spending their time traveling and then in Belfast.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think if I went there, I'd like to spend a little longer in Belfast. But if you got on this train, well, you just kind of go where the train goes. I guess that's the fun of it, huh?
Right. So, you know, something you might do with an Ireland tour like this is you would combine it maybe with a couple of other different itineraries. So we know that from yesterday, there's a 2-day itinerary, 4 days. So at most, you're getting 6.
Right.
And in 6, you can cover a lot of ground, but if you want to take it a little more slowly, you might want to plan a couple of other activities to do beyond the train.
What would you do? I'd probably take the 2-day and then go on down to London for the rest of the time. What would you do?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I've never been to Ireland, but there are a lot of very famous things in Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
So having never planned a trip there, I'm not really sure where they are or how you would plan a good itinerary to see all of those things. It seems like the sort of place that you could spend several weeks exploring, maybe months or years
trying
to see
everything. Well, I don't
think
it would be quite like that. I've been there with the Heavenly Melody Singers, and we went down to places like Killarney and Galway and all of these places on the left-hand side of your map there. But you see a lot of countryside, and you see the pictures here, cows and trees, but it's kind of a lot of the same, too. So I think, you know, in 2 days you can see quite a bit.
Right. I just know that for people in the United States that are of Irish descent, you know, they often plan trips that go specifically where their families used
to live.
Yeah,
that's true.
I even think of my wife, Carolyn. Her mother also did one of these trips to Ireland.
Oh, she did.
Yeah, where they go and they say, okay, this is where your family is from, and, you know, this was the farmland that they used to own. You know, so for many Americans and
a
lot of Americans are of Irish
mm-hmm.
descent, going back there can be a very special experience. It's kind of on my bucket list to see all those old areas and re-explore.
But I don't know if you
that.
Want to take this train. Probably you'd make more direct, I think.
I don't know. If I had the opportunity, I would combine like that historic trip of learning about my family with one of the train trips. Because honestly, this train sounds wonderful. I think I'd really enjoy it.
See, that's because it's got an Irish background.
That's right. That's
okay.
Right. This writer's trip, though, was actually 2 days long, so we've covered the first day.
Mm-hmm.
And in our next reading, we go on to find out what this author has done in the second day. So let's do our third reading.
Ireland's oldest city. Our second day's journey took us back into the Republic of Ireland to Ireland's oldest city, Waterford, founded by the Vikings in the 9th century. I was enthralled with the Curramore House and Estate, seat of the Marquis of Waterford. The original castle was built in 1205, when the owners learned that King John would be visiting and expected a place to stay worthy of his stature. The king, remember him from the Robin Hood tales, proved that not only was he evil, but also inconsiderate, in that after the family practically bankrupted themselves to welcome him, he never showed. All aboard. As we made our way back to the Grand Hibernian, I saw her from a distance, sparkling cobalt blue against a green backdrop of hills and valleys, and was reminded again of how much I love trains.
I didn't realize until I read this that Waterford was one of the oldest Ireland cities. I always thought about, you know, that the capital is, and that's where everybody goes. You don't hear much about Waterford.
I wasn't aware of this either, but, you know, we, before the show, were discussing kind of the history of this, and Simon had quite a bit to share, and it's an interesting historical fact seeing how Waterford was established by Vikings and some of the history behind that.
Yeah. The Vikings, they really got around. They went over to England. In fact, some people said they probably even got to America. Who knows?
Mm-hmm. That's right. They're not from Ireland, though. That's the,
no,
the key there.
They're from Norway.
Yeah, Norway and Denmark, Scandinavian countries.
Right.
And they were sort of famous around this 9th century when they raided Ireland, I guess, and set up this city. For basically raiding different countries and settling in different countries. And
but since they founded the city, so they started it anyway.
That's right. So they obviously came to Ireland and decided to stay because they built a city.
And that just shows how amazing Ireland is. Even Vikings can stay.
Yeah, even Vikings can stay there, right. But interesting here, they have a picture of a place. What's the name of that house? Well, Kirkamore House, right?
Yeah, Kirkamore House, and it also has an estate, which just means sort of attached lands or a farm or forest area, so a big area of land around the house. And it says it's the seat of the Marquis or Marquis of Waterford. Mm-hmm. Now, that's a tricky word for North Americans to pronounce.
The Earl of something, isn't it?
That's right. Well, Joe was telling us that it's between a duke and an earl.
Right. It's a kind of one of those titles, British titles. Yeah.
That's right. So that's one of the reasons it's difficult for North Americans to pronounce properly and fully
understand.
Looks
like a French word to me.
We don't really have these titles.
We don't have that. Although I thought as a Canadian with being in the Commonwealth that
you might know
royal titles was a thing you're familiar with.
Well, to a certain extent, like I know, for example, that dukes are usually related to the king. Or the queen. Mm-hmm. So, for example,
second or third cousin
princes, Prince Charles is the Duke of Cornwall.
Yeah.
Things like that. Earls tend to be people who are from different families, so they're not actually related to the king, but it's a very sort of powerful position in the nobility.
Right.
And Marquis, I have always thought of as being from Europe rather than from England.
Well, I thought that was a French word anyway. It
does definitely have French tones to it, doesn't it? Weird. Anyway, this house, Kirkmore House.
Is that a house? It looks like a castle to me.
It is pretty big. That's but it says it's the seat of this Marquis, which just means it's his family home or the ancestral family
home. It's a castle, really.
Yeah.
Because it says the original castle was built when?
Yeah, that's right. The original castle was built in 1205, when the owners learned that King John would be visiting. And King John, he's of course an interesting character. If you know the stories of Robin Hood, you'll know that King John is kind of the bad guy.
He's a bad guy. He was
a very
proud king, and it says that he was going to visit them. And what did he say when he was going to go there?
So, it mentions that, they expected King John to come, and so they wanted to have a place that was worthy of someone that's of such a high status. For a king to come and visit you, you need to have a nice place. And so,
well, King John himself expected a place. He's the one that said, "I'm going to come. You better have a good place." He was that kind of a king.
That's right.
Yeah.
And you know what happened?
Well, it's interesting because the thing King John is probably most famous for now is running into trouble with all his nobles. They ended up sort of limiting his power because he was doing things like this where he said, he wanted a great place to stay. And it tells us that he proved he was not only evil, but also inconsiderate or rude because the family practically bankrupted themselves. They spent all their money to build this house to welcome him, but he never showed up.
Could you imagine all that effort and for nothing?
Right, and the bankrupt, and then, here, we're ready, and he's, I'm not going there now.
Right, and so any sort of favor or position you could have curried with that king is just gone.
Well, anyway, that's an interesting side story, but all aboard means let's get back on the train.
That's right, so they say all aboard here, because obviously they're finished their tour, their second day tour, so they're back on the train, and it says, as we made our way back to the Grand Hibernian, so as they walked back to the train. I saw her from a distance, and that's interesting.
Who's her?
Who is her? Often in English, we refer to boats and ships and trains as though they were girls. So we use female pronouns like her and she to describe them. And so really, the writer here is saying the writer saw the train from a distance.
And he was so happy.
Right? That's right. He describes the train as sparkling cobalt blue. And blue, of course, is a color. Cobalt blue is a shade, one kind of blue.
Right.
And, it was very shiny in the distance against a green backdrop. So in the background was all kinds of beautiful green color.
Well, they saw a lot of things, and we have a little picture here. They saw this Titanic Museum in Belfast, and we know the Titanic was that famous ship that sunk, right?
That's right, and you might be wondering why the Titanic Museum is here, and that's because the ship was built and outfitted in Belfast.
So read that part.
So it says the Titanic Museum opened in 2012 on the site where the ill-fated ship was built and outfitted. Its stunning angular design is meant to mimic the prows of a ship. Although the 3,000 individual silver aluminum shards on the facade have led to it being nicknamed the iceberg.
So that's just one thing you might see if you go to Belfast, or you might want to go see this castle that King John didn't live in, or just see the countryside. It's a beautiful place.
Yep. So if you're looking for a place to go, think about going to Ireland. And if you're planning to go to Ireland, think about enjoying a fantastic train trip as a great way to see a big part of the country in a fairly short period of time.
Enjoy a country house on rails. And that sounds like a delightful experience.
Well, I think the person that wrote this really thought so. And thanks for being with us as we've studied this article together. Thank you. And we'll see you again for a new lesson tomorrow. Goodbye, everyone.
Goodbye. Goodbye.